Hi everyone, and welcome back to the 12th video from the Old Testament Survey course. In previous sections on the book of Genesis, we covered the first two historical epochs, the prehistory and the patriarchs. In this section, we're going to start the next epoch and the next biblical book, which is Exodus. Like Genesis, Exodus is a very important book, foundational for all the rest of the Old Testament. So we're going to split Exodus into two sections and go in a bit more detail than we will for the rest of the Old Testament books. In this section, we'll cover Israel's deliverance and escape from Egypt by God's powerful salvation. And in the next section, we'll cover God's revelation of the law and his covenant at Mount Sinai in the desert. Let's start by looking at some of the background of the book of Exodus. And the main background of Exodus is all that we saw in the book of Genesis. Exodus is the fulfillment of the promise made to Abraham in Genesis. It's the start of the nation from Jacob's descendants. Genesis is the prequel to Exodus. Exodus is the sequel to Genesis. And the name of this book is Exodus. Exodus is a Greek word that literally means way or road out of. It's related to the word exit. And it obviously refers to Israel leaving from Egypt. The Hebrew title for this book comes from the first words of the book and is translated as, "These are the names." The Exodus story is probably the defining event of all of the Old Testament. It is the beginning of the nation of Israel. It is the beginning of the Mosaic Law and the Mosaic Covenant. And the rest of the Old Testament looks back to the Exodus as the founding of their nation and the founding of their faith. The historical location of the Exodus, there's an uneven record of direct historical evidence of the Exodus from Egypt. Is this a problem? Well, probably not, because Egypt does not brag about its defeats. And it actually has a history of purging the historical record of unflattering events. There is some historical evidence, and the story fits very well in a few places in Egyptian and Palestinian history. This leads naturally to the question of the date of the Exodus. There's two main possibilities. The earlier possible date is typically put around 1446 BC. And the latter possible date is around 1275 BC. Both of these possibilities can be faithfully integrated with the biblical data, and neither possibility is without question, without issue. It's a debated question, and your textbook has more detailed instruction if you want to pursue this. For what it's worth, I think the earlier date is the more likely of the two options. But either is still possible. Let's move to look at the organization of the book of Exodus. The overall outline of the book is based on the three major locations in which the events took place. The book can be divided into three sections based on each of the three settings. The first major division takes place in Egypt. The second division takes place in the desert as Israel travels out of Egypt towards the Promised Land. And the third major division takes place around Mount Sinai in the wilderness. We're going to cover the first two of these divisions in this section, and in the next section, we'll cover the third division at Sinai, as well as give an expanded outline of the last portion of Exodus. But for now, keep in mind that the book is organized by three places where it happens. Now let's look at some of the key verses from the first two divisions of Exodus, the deliverance from Egypt. The first key verse is Exodus 3, verses 9 through 15. God is speaking to Moses from the burning bush, and he says, "Now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I've seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And God said, "I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you've brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain." Moses said to God, "Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you.' And they ask me, 'What is his name?' Then what shall I tell them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am. This is what you're to say to the Israelites: 'I am has sent me to you.'" God also said to Moses, "Say to the Israelites, 'Yahweh, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name by which I'm going to be remembered from generation to generation.'" In these verses, God not only commissions Moses to lead Israel out of Egypt, but more importantly, God reveals his proper name, his name Yahweh. We'll go into more detail about the meaning of his name when we get to chapter 3. The next key verse is Exodus 6, verses 6 through 8. We already looked at this verse in an earlier section when we looked at God's design for humanity, summarized by Scrub. In this verse, Moses had complained to God because his plan did not work out at first, and God responds, "Therefore, say to the Israelites, 'I am Yahweh, and I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. I will free you from being slaves to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with mighty acts of judgment. I will take you as my own people, and I will be your God. Then you will know that I am Yahweh, your God, who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians, and I will bring you to the land I swore with uplifted hand to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to you as a possession. I am Yahweh.'" In these verses, God reveals his purpose, not only for the Exodus, but for all time, that you would know that I am the Lord. And he also reveals his purpose to give scrub to his people. And the third key passage is Exodus chapter 9, verses 14 through 16. God had already sent some of the plagues on Egypt, and he's about to send another. But before he does, he gives this message to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, through Moses, explaining the purpose of the plagues. And he says, "This time I will send the full force of my plagues against you and against your officials and your people, so that you may know that there is no one like me in all the earth. For by now I could have stretched out my hand and struck you and your people with a plague that would have wiped you off the earth. But I've raised you up for this very purpose, that I might show you my power, and that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth." God's purposes in the plagues and in the Exodus is to reveal his name, so that all the world will know of his power and might through his exploits and the news of them that will spread to the surrounding nations. And then the last key verse in Exodus, in this section of Exodus, is chapter 14, verses 30 and 31. It says, "That day the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the great power the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses his servant." This verse summarizes that God rescued his people from Egypt at the Red Sea, and their appropriate response was to be in awe of God and to trust him. These then are the key verses of this first section of Exodus. And now let's work through some of the highlights of each of these sections. The first subsection transitions from the end of Genesis and sets the stage for the rest of Exodus. Generations after Joseph's leadership, the Israelites are now an oppressed minority, enslaved by the Egyptians. And the Egyptians fear them because their population is growing. They're being fruitful and multiplying. They're getting closer to the number of the stars that God had promised. Therefore, the Egyptians told the Hebrew midwives to kill all the male Israelite babies as soon as they are born. But the midwives refused to do so, and God rewarded them for that. And into this context, Moses was born, an illegal male baby. His mother hid him as long as she could. Then, miraculously, Moses was adopted into Pharaoh's own family, where he was protected until he grew to adulthood. When he was an adult, Moses tried to help rescue the Israelites by committing murder. But he just gets in the way by doing this, and he has to leave town quickly as a fugitive. And this transitional section ends with a statement that God saw the oppression of his people, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham. And as we talked about earlier, this is theologically loaded language that means the time is right and God is about to act. In the next section, we see the call and commissioning of Moses. God appeared to Moses in a burning bush in the desert and sent him to go back to Egypt and lead Israel out. At first, Moses resisted and made excuses. Moses basically says, I'm nobody, I'm unable. And God replies with, I will be with you, which, by the way, is all the qualification that Moses needed. But Moses continues to make excuses, and God was patient. But when Moses outright refused, says, send somebody else, God's patience reached an end, and he was angry with Moses. But during this dialogue, Moses asks what name he should give when somebody asks which God has sent him. You see, in Egypt, like in almost every other place at this time, people thought there were multiple gods, and they typically linked these gods with parts of nature. For instance, there was a god of the sun, a god of the moon, a god of the sea, etc. There's multiple gods. So Moses was basically saying, in this kind of mindset and worldview, what kind of God are you? How am I to explain you and describe you? And God answered, I am who I am. Tell them, I am has sent you. And then he said, tell them Yahweh, the God of your fathers, has sent me. This is my name by which I'm to be remembered. Now let me explain what's going on here. The name Yahweh is derived from the Hebrew word that means he is. So God says, my name is I am, and you're to refer to me as he is. And remember that the name Yahweh, his name being known, is very important to God. Not primarily that we would know the Hebrew term or know what it means, but that we would know him. And that we would know and experience the kind of God that he is. So let's explore the significance of this name that we learn from this chapter. From the response, I am, we learn that God is. He is the self-existing one. He is dependent on nothing else, and he is defined by nothing else. There's nothing else that we can compare him to. Moses was asking, to what part of nature and what part of our experience can I liken you to? What is it that we've already know that I can use to explain you? Or what religious ideas can I compare you with? And God basically says, you can't. I'm so far beyond your experience and your understanding. We cannot define God by our standards or our understanding or our experiences. We cannot fit God into our reality because it's his reality that he has fit us into. We don't define God. He defines us because he created us, not vice versa. So God says, I am existence itself. I am uncreated. I am the foundation of all reality. And not only this, but we see from the wider story that this unique God graciously acts on behalf of his chosen people. He doesn't need them. They need him. And they would know the kind of God that he is partly by experiencing his goodness and his power on their behalf. And he assures Moses that they will know that he is Yahweh. He will make himself known through his rescue of them from Egypt. And therefore Moses returns to Egypt, and he meets his brother Aaron and the elders of Israel. He tells them God's plan to rescue them. And that is a transition into the cycle of plagues. So what is up with all these miraculous things that happen in Egypt? You know, rivers turn to blood, flies, hail, frogs, etc. Why do these things happen? What is the point? Well, I want to suggest this is a power contest between God and Pharaoh, king of Egypt, which is really a contest between the gods of Egypt and the one real, true God, which is really no contest at all, because they're not really gods. And it starts with God's message to Pharaoh. He sent Moses to Pharaoh with the message, God says, let my people go so that they will worship me in the desert. In other words, he's commanding that Pharaoh would let them go so that they will serve God and no longer serve Pharaoh. God was very clear from the beginning. He was demanding a change of masters for his people. And Pharaoh responded with disdain. He said, who is this God that orders me around? And he actually punishes the Israelites to show that I'm in control. And that's when Moses complained to God that, hey, you sent me and it didn't work. And Moses questioned what God was doing. And God responded, as we've seen in an earlier section, by revealing his purpose. You will know that I am Yahweh. And he revealed his design for humanity that we've abbreviated as scrub. And hopefully you remember this discussion from the earlier video. And then God told Moses in advance what he was going to do and why. Look at chapter 7, starting at verse 3, which says, God speaking, he says, I will harden Pharaoh's heart. And though I multiply my miraculous signs and wonders in Egypt, he will not listen to you. Then I will lay my hand on Egypt, and with mighty acts of judgment, I will bring out my divisions, my people, the Israelites. And the Egyptians will know that I am Yahweh when I stretch out my hand against Egypt and bring the Israelites out of it. Notice the clearly stated purpose is that Egypt will know that he is the Lord. And then God sent a variety of plagues on Egypt. The Egyptian magicians counterfeited some of them, but they were quickly outpowered. And the plagues increase in intensity. God's people suffered a bit from some of the plagues, but God protected them from most of them. And throughout the cycle of plague after plague, Pharaoh wavers. And yet, his hardness of heart keeps him from submitting. And it's made clear that God is in control of Pharaoh's heart because God is the master of Egypt. And the plagues are clearly intended to humiliate the Egyptian gods. Like I said, the Egyptians had gods in all forms of nature, etc. And they specifically had gods in the form of flies, frogs, cattle. You can go through the list of the plagues and find an Egyptian god that was basically embarrassed by that. In other words, the plagues were designed to show that God is in control of the very areas that the Egyptians, they thought their gods were in control of. And the greatest god in Egyptian religion was the sun. And notice that the last plague, the second to the last plague, excuse me, was darkness. In other words, God turned off the sun. And then the last plague was the death of the firstborn son of Pharaoh, who was thought to be the embodiment of a god. And the overarching reason for all the plagues is clearly spelled out by God. He said to Pharaoh, I will send the full force of my plagues against you, against your officials and all your people, so that you may know that there is no one like me in all the earth. I could have stretched out my hand and struck you and your people with a plague that would have wiped you off the earth, but I've raised you up for this purpose, that I might show you my power and that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth. You see, God could have easily snuck his people out of Egypt without using the plagues. He could have convinced them with one plague. He could have destroyed all of Egypt with one word. He could have held back from hardening Pharaoh's heart so that the plagues would have ended earlier. But God prolonged the whole thing to make the point. God wanted to make it abundantly clear that he is the Lord and the gods of Egypt are not. God is Lord. Pharaoh is not in charge. Remember, at the beginning, Pharaoh asked, who is this God that bosses me around? And God said, oh yeah, you will know that I am Yahweh. And not only that, because of what I'm going to do to you, the whole world will know that I am Yahweh. And then the last plague was accompanied by a ceremony given by God. And the whole tradition, the Passover, has tremendous significance. God warned his people what he's about to do. He gave them instructions to prepare for the Passover. And he let it be known that this is given not only for this particular event, but from the beginning, it was designed to be a regular commemoration for all future generations. First, God's people asked the Egyptians for their valuables, and the Egyptians freely gave them because of their fear of God. In other words, the treasures of Egypt leave Egypt with God's people, and they're later used to build the tabernacle. Then each family in Israel sacrificed a lamb. And they ate a hasty meal in preparation for a hasty exit from Egypt. And the people put the blood of the lamb on their doorposts so that the angel of death, when he goes through Egypt, he will pass over their house and not go into the house, and the firstborn of their house will not die. That's why it's called Passover. But let's think about the significance of the blood on the door. Why did they put blood on the doorway? Do you really think God's angel would not have known whose house was whose unless there was blood on it? Of course he would have known. See, the blood was not primarily for the angel's benefit as much as for the people. It was, first of all, for their obedience so that they show their trust in God, but it was also to instruct Israel that sacrifice and death is the price that is paid for their life. It demonstrates substitutionary sacrifice, which ultimately points to the cross. And notice when they dipped into the blood, painted the top, and then each side of the doorway, they make the sign of the cross. And the Passover meal ceremony was, like I said, to be a permanent commemoration. And that night, all the firstborn of Egypt's people and the firstborn of all their animals died. And this is explicitly said to be God's judgment on the gods of Egypt. Exodus 12:12 says, God says, on that same night, I will pass through Egypt and strike down every firstborn, both men and animals, and I will bring judgment on all the gods of Egypt. I am Yahweh. And because this happened, Egypt drove the Israelites out of the country, In other words, not only did they let them leave, they forced them to go, just like God said. And it said that God consecrated all of Israel's firstborn to himself because of this. They were set aside as God's special property because he spared them by his grace. Then Israel was led out through the desert by a pillar of God's presence going before him. And here's a map of the probable route of the Exodus. God did not lead them by the normal route to the promised land, but God led them to the desert because he had strategic plans for what came next. And this brings us to the dramatic conflict at the Red Sea. See, Pharaoh had a change of heart and chased them with his army after they left to capture or kill them. Exodus 14:4 says, God said, I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them, but I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am Yahweh. The Israelites, led by God, became trapped between the army and the Red Sea, and they quickly panicked and lost faith in God when the promise was tested. But God always knew what he was doing. And by the way, too often when we get in a bad situation, we're tempted to think God has dropped the ball and we complain, we lose faith. Don't do that. Instead, when we get in those situations, we should humbly ask, God, what are you doing? Why have you allowed me to be here? And what do you want me to learn, and what do you want me to do now that I am here? Trusting that you know what you're doing and that you're in control. Because God often reveals his glory in difficult situations. Now back to the story. The Israelites are protected in the meantime by the pillar of God's presence intervening between them and Egypt's army. And then Moses, by God's instruction, he holds out his arms over the sea, and God parts the water. And God's people cross over on dry land. It is a miraculous crossing. And then Pharaoh follows with his army. And this is not a great strategy, considering what Pharaoh has already seen of God's power. And then the water flows back, and the army is all drowned. And then we see the theological point of this episode, summarized in 14:30. It says, that day the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the great power the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses his servant. The Israelites, they get it. They trust God. Or so it seems. You see, their trust in God was short-lived. Mountaintop type of experiences, they're great, but they're not intended to last you a lifetime. God intends for us to know him every day. And if we try and live just off the exciting experiences, if we try to live off last week's meal, it shows. Then on the far side of the Red Sea, the nation celebrated with singing and dancing. But like I said, the celebration was short-lived. As they traveled through the desert, the people complained about the lack of food and water. They grumbled against Moses and against the Lord. The promise was being tested, and the people responded with unbelief. Remember, the first temptation was to doubt God and to doubt his goodness, and to want to be in control of the situation instead of God. and the Israelites, they fell for it. But God responded with grace. He provided food and water. He caused manna to miraculously appear to feed them. Manna is a humorous name, which means, what is it? And later we see the first example of the new nation involved in warfare. They were attacked, and God gave them miraculous victory. And then the final episode of this section, Moses takes his father-in-law's advice, and he shares responsibility of leadership over the people with qualified leaders from the community. And this brings them to the Sinai Desert, near Mount Sinai, where the events of the next section will take place. But so far, in the first 18 chapters of Exodus, we've seen the monumental revelation of God by him rescuing his people from slavery in Egypt and providing for them and leading them in the desert. So now let's look at some of the key theological themes in this first section. The first theme is the name. That is God's proper name, Yahweh, and its meaning for his people. A few of the things that God's name tells us about him so far are that God is. He exists, and he's more real than anything else. I am is his name, and he's the foundation and standard of everything else. And we learn that God is the way he is. He is self-defining. We don't get to choose what kind of God we serve. There's only one God, and he is the way he is, like it or not. We also see that God is very, very, very strong to save. He revealed his power and his ability. He is far greater than all the power of Egypt, the greatest world empire of that time. He embarrassed them by his power. And finally, God fulfills his promise. God is faithful, and he never fails. And the second theological theme is deliverance and rescue. God takes care of his people, and he rescues them from their oppressors. And we see that God's rescue involves covering by blood. And that's to demonstrate that sin is punishable by death, but God provides blood to turn away death. And as a result, God owns his people, especially the firstborn. He owns them by right not only of his creating them, but also because of his purchase of them through deliverance. Now, this is a partial list of the theological themes of Exodus. More themes will be added to this list in the next section when we look at the second part of the book of Exodus. But for now, let's review what we've learned. First, the organization of Exodus. The outline of the whole book is divided by three locations, and they are in Egypt, in the desert, and at Sinai. And let's review the theological themes. And they are the name, deliverance and rescue, and there are more themes to come in the next section. In the next section, we will continue the story of the Exodus, and we'll look at all that God did for the people of Israel while they were camped at Mount Sinai. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for watching.